There is a photograph on AvWeb right now that stopped a lot of pilots mid-scroll today. An aircraft banking over Oshkosh, the bubble canopy catching the morning light, elliptical wingtips tracing that distinctive planform, the unmistakable dorsal fin, the long shark nose pointing toward the horizon. Every single visual cue says P-51 Mustang, every single one, except it is not a P-51 Mustang. I'm Tower. This is ATIS on Radio Hangar. And today we're going to talk about that photograph, the aircraft in it, and what it says about where general aviation is actually going. Before we get into it, let me bring in today's sponsor, AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins built to mark the milestones, the discipline, and the pride behind every step in flight. From first solo to airline transport pilot, every coin tells a story. AviationSoul.com. The picture of the day for September 8th, courtesy of AvWeb, is the Scalewings SW-51 Mustang photographed over Oshkosh during this year's EAA AirVenture. If you have not seen it, go pull it up before you do anything else today. Take 30 seconds and just look. Because that photograph tells a story that words take a little longer to tell. Let's start with the aircraft that photograph honors, even if only by implication. The one that casts the shadow this design lives in, the North American P-51 Mustang, is, by almost any measure, the most emotionally resonant propeller-driven aircraft ever built. That is a claim worth defending because aviation has given us truly extraordinary machines. The Supermarine Spitfire carries its own mythology and earned every bit of it. The Grumman F-6F Hellcat changed the war in the Pacific with a combination of firepower and pilot survivability that redefined carrier aviation. The Focke Wulf 190A was a genuine shock to Allied pilots who first encountered it over France. But the Mustang occupies a different category. It crossed from aviation memory into general cultural memory in a way almost no other aircraft ever has. Part of that is the origin story. North American Aviation designed the airframe in something close to 120 days from first contract to completed design. That number gets repeated because it should be. The early versions flew with Allison engines and were considered mediocre above 20,000 feet, adequate below it, but outclassed in the altitude band where the real air war over Europe was being decided. Then came the Merlin. British engineers mated the Rolls-Royce Merlin to the North American airframe, and the result was one of the finest all-around fighters of the entire war. Fast, long-legged, capable at altitude. Honest in the cockpit according to the pilots who flew it seriously, and came home to talk about it. The 8th Air Force put P-51s on the long missions that had been bleeding the heavy bomber groups white before escort fighters with that kind of range existed. B-17 Flying Fortresses and B-24 Liberators were making runs to targets like Schweinfurt and back without fighter cover for the last hours of the mission. The Luftwaffe had learned the math wait for the escorts to turn home at the limit of their fuel, then attack. The losses were terrible and well documented. The Mustang changed that equation. It could stay, it could fight, it could escort the bombers all the way to Berlin and all the way home. The Luftwaffe could no longer simply wait at the edge of range and pick their moment. That changed the strategic calculus of the air war in Europe in ways historians are still debating. That history is encoded in the silhouette. When you see a Mustang, you're not simply looking at a design, you're looking at an aircraft that altered the course of a war. The cultural weight is real. When Hollywood needed a World War II fighter, it was usually a Mustang. When a museum wants a centerpiece warbird, a Mustang makes the shortlist. When a pilot decides what to put on the hangar wall, the Mustang is one of the first images that comes to mind, and it has been that way for 80 years. That is a lot of weight for an Austrian composite aircraft to carry. And yet, look at that picture. Scalewings is a manufacturer based in Austria. They are not yet a household name in American general aviation. But that is beginning to change, and this year's AirVenture is part of the reason why. The company has spent years developing the SW-51, and what they built is remarkable in the way that actually matters. Not because it is the fastest aircraft in its class, not because it is the most affordable, but because it makes you feel something before you know a single performance number. That is harder to engineer than it looks. Here is what you need to know about the SW-51. It is a two-seat composite aircraft, designed from the ground up, to capture the visual essence of the P-51D Mustang. The bubble canopy. The laminar flow wing with that distinctive elliptical planform. The scalloped exhaust stacks along the belly. The long spinner. The whole visual language of the Mustang, recreated in modern materials, using modern tooling and modern aerodynamic understanding. Scalewings did not simply shrink the original dimensions and bolt in a modern engine. They studied what makes the Mustang read as a Mustang at a glance. Which proportions carry the visual identity? Which curves communicate the thing? And then they built an aircraft that carries those cues in an airframe sized for practical, safe, modern operation. Stand next to one on the ramp and your eyes do not debate what they are looking at. The composite construction is worth a moment on its own. The materials and techniques available to aircraft manufacturers today are extraordinary compared to what was possible even 20 years ago. Carbon fiber layups, precision tooled molds, surface finishing processes that produce results rivaling certified production aircraft from major manufacturers. The people doing this work are not garage hobbyists. They are aerospace professionals applying techniques developed in motorsport, in aerospace, in high-performance marine manufacturing, to general aviation airframes. When you look at a modern composite aircraft built to this standard, you are looking at genuine engineering discipline applied to a product that also happens to be beautiful. And the aircraft flies that matters more than the aesthetics. Actually, some warbird replicas over the years chased the look at the expense of flying qualities. Some early P-51 reproductions had handling characteristics that could bite an unprepared pilot because the designers were focused on the silhouette and not on what happens when a pilot with average stick and rudder skills gets into a slipping turn on final. Scale wings went the other direction, design an aircraft that handles predictably and rewards good airmanship first, then wrap it in that shape. The result is described by pilots who have flown it as accessible and satisfying, rather than demanding and anxious-making. The aircraft operates in the light sport and ultralight category, depending on country and configuration. In the United States, this connects to a regulatory conversation that has been developing for years now. The Federal Aviation Administration's light sport aircraft category has roots in 2004 rulemaking. The original sport pilot and light sport aircraft rule had a clear purpose: lower the barrier to flight, create a certification pathway for manufacturers that was less burdensome than full Part 23, and let pilots fly without a traditional medical certificate. That was sound policy, and the results bore it out. The category produced genuinely good aircraft and brought real pilots into flying who might otherwise have been grounded. But the original rule also had constraints: weight limits, speed limits, system complexity limits. An aircraft with retractable landing gear was a harder fit under that original framework. The Federal Aviation Administration has been working through updated rulemaking under what became known as the Mosaic Framework, which expanded the category's parameters meaningfully. Higher maximum speed, more maximum weight, more system complexity is now accommodated. What this means practically for a pilot looking at the SW-51 is that the regulatory landscape in the United States has been moving in a direction that makes aircraft like this more accessible. Verify the specific certification status of any aircraft you evaluate, because the details determine operating privileges, certificate requirements, and maintenance rules. But the direction of travel is favorable. Now, let's talk about why pilots want to fly warbirds in the first place, because I think that question gets underexplained in aviation coverage. The warbird community in the United States is something genuinely special. The Commemorative Air Force, the EAA Warbird Division. The individual owners, restoration specialists, and maintenance shops scattered across the country, who have dedicated serious money and years of their lives to keeping original aircraft flying. These people are performing a form of living history that no museum collection, however well curated, can fully replicate. When a genuine P-51D makes a low pass at Oshkosh and the Merlin unwinds at full power, that is not nostalgia as entertainment. The air moves differently. You feel it before you properly hear it. Something about it communicates across 80 years in a way that a recording or a museum exhibit cannot. Pilots who own and maintain genuine warbirds understand that they are stewards of something irreplaceable. Every surviving flying Mustang, every airworthy Spitfire, every example of these aircraft still operating is a finite resource being held in trust through extraordinary effort and expense. The authentic warbird community deserves enormous respect, and nothing I say today is meant to suggest that a modern composite aircraft designed in this decade is equivalent to the real thing. It is not. The history is not transferable. It does not work that way. But genuine warbirds are expensive in ways that close them off to most pilots. That is simply reality. Acquisition costs for a flying P-51D start at $1 million on the conservative end and climb significantly from there depending on the airframe's history, documentation, and engine condition. Annual operating costs for a Mustang that actually gets flown, accounting for engine reserves, maintenance, fuel, insurance, and the inevitable unexpected, can run into the tens of thousands of dollars per year when everything is going right. The circle of pilots who can own and operate an authentic Mustang is necessarily small. It has always been small. Within that circle, the ones flying them regularly are fewer still. For every pilot who has stood on a ramp and looked at a P-51 and felt something happen in their chest, There are thousands for whom the authentic aircraft will always be out of reach, not a reflection of capability, a reflection of economics and circumstance. And that is just reality. For a long time, the answer for those pilots was the kit-built category. The experimental amateur-built regulations have produced remarkable Warbird replicas over the decades. The Titan T-51 has given builders a genuine Mustang-look aircraft with modern power plant options, and the results at every Oshkosh flight line speak for themselves. Builders have reproduced Spitfires, Corsairs, and others at reduced scale, spending years in the shop creating aircraft that carry the spirit of the originals in every detail. That community is extraordinary, but not every pilot has 5 years in a fully equipped shop and the fabrication skills to build an aircraft safely. The experimental amateur-built path is real and valuable. It is not accessible to everyone who might want to fly something that looks and feels like this. Scalewings built a different kind of answer. A professionally manufactured aircraft with professional composite construction, professional aerodynamic development, and a level of finish that reflects what this industry is actually capable of in skilled hands. An aircraft you can buy and fly rather than spend years building and then fly. That fills a gap that has been there for a long time, and there are a lot of pilots who have been waiting on the other side of it. Oshkosh is the right venue for a statement like that. If you have been to AirVenture, you understand. There is nowhere else on Earth where you can walk from a fabric-covered 1920s biplane to a 2026 electric experimental aircraft to a formation of genuine warbirds in the span of 100 yards. Every chapter of aviation history and every chapter of aviation's future are both present simultaneously on the grounds of Whitman Regional Airport every July. It is the only place where an aircraft like the SW-51 can take to the air and instantly exist in conversation with both the aircraft it honors and the era it represents. The context the airport provides is irreplaceable. When Scalewings brought the SW-51 to AirVenture and put it in the air over that runway, they were making a deliberate statement. They believed American pilots would look at this aircraft and feel what pilots are supposed to feel. When AvWeb runs that photograph as the picture of the day 3 months after the event, the statement has landed for the pilot. Who is looking at this aircraft seriously? Here is what to think through. First, understand the certification status of the specific configuration you're evaluating. Light sport, experimental, and imported aircraft each have distinct regulatory pathways and operating privileges in the United States. The category the aircraft sits in determines what pilot certificate you need, what medical requirements apply, and what maintenance rules govern the aircraft. Get that right before any other conversation happens. Second, plan the transition training with real care. A tandem two-seat aircraft with retractable gear, a bubble canopy, and energy management characteristics that reward a pilot who thinks ahead is not a first aircraft and is not an impulse purchase. Find a qualified instructor with specific experience in the type and do the transition properly. Third, talk to owners before you write a check. The SW-51 community is growing but still small enough that individual owners are reachable people with genuine experience to share. Ask hard questions about factory parts support from Austria and lead times for anything not stocked domestically. Ask whether airframe and power plant mechanics in your area have worked on this type before. Unusual aircraft reward the pilots who do their homework. The photograph today is a single frame. One aircraft, one pilot, one morning over Oshkosh. But it is also a frame around something larger. The Mustang silhouette has been inspiring pilots since the 1940s. What is changing is not the inspiration. What is changing is who can act on it. Modern composite construction, modern engines, modern regulatory frameworks. These things are making that silhouette attainable for pilots who would not have had a path to it a generation ago. That is not a compromise on the heritage. That is how the heritage survives. If you need proof, look at the picture. Sources today come from AvWeb, who published the photograph and brought this aircraft back into the conversation. P-51 history draws on 8th Air Force records and National Archives documentation. Light sport category information comes from the Federal Aviation Administration. More at radiohangar.com. I'm Tower. Keep the shiny side up.